Is there a John Luck Pickard here?
Stardate 97758.19. Welcome to Star Trek Discovery Pod, the number one podcast about playing solo soccer on a starship shirtless.
Yeah.
My name is Mike Moody.
I jumped the gun. I'm Mariah Gossett.
You just want to get to it.
I want to get to it.
My name is Mike Moody. And the one Star Trek character I'd love to dull my emotional pain with, if you know what I mean.
We do.
Yeah.
Sex.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got it.
The one I want to fuck is Kelvinverse Uhura, played by Zoe Saldana.
Ah.
Solid choice.
Okay.
It's a solid choice. However, I believe I have created the best choice.
Okay.
Which is...
Your choices are usually pretty good. And who are you?
Oh, my name is Mariah Gossett. And my Star Trek character I would like to dull lots and lots of emotional pain with is two people same time with Mirrorverse Tilly and
Tilly. That's
and number
mean.
One
the Rebecca Romijn number one.
Yeah, Rebecca Romijn number one.
Oh yeah.
Dang.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, man.
Some boss ass bitches.
Hey, I'm Grant. And who would I want to hook up with?
Dull emotional pain with.
That's what I mean. Just dull my emotional pain with.
Mm-hmm.
A la Jurati.
I gotta give it to my man. To
Rios?
To Jean-Luc Picard.
Oh. I mean, he's probably got a good wine selection. He wine and dine you 69 yet. Good to go.
That's true. Yeah.
He's been around the moon a few times. I bet he knows what to do there.
Have a nice Earl Grey afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mainly that's all I really want to do, just drink Earl Grey with him.
All right.
You know. All right. Well, now that we have gotten a very intimate picture into all of our psyches.
I'm the hetero one. Surprise.
Welcome.
And Clyde's not here. He's being replaced by the Q-Bear.
Yep. Q-Bear is
Hi,
here
Q-Bear.
Tonight.
Maybe Q-Bear will talk later. I'm not sure.
We'll see.
But
we'll see how tired I get.
His choice was a tribble, actually.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted...
Oof, there's three on the table. He's going to have fun later.
Doesn't want to fuck a tribble. All right. Tonight, we're breaking down episode 6 of Picard, The Impossible Box, a.k.a.
People getting into them boxes.
People be fucking on this ship, yo.
Yeah.
That happened. And getting hoisted.
But you know who's be fucking on this ship?
What do you
know
doing?
Who's be fucking?
I'm looking at your notes and I'm like, well, he's sticking to a script.
Going.
That's literally what he wrote. Who's be fucking?
Kim Pine.
Don't play too much. We'll have to pay for it.
All right. There we go.
That was over 10 seconds. Nobody tell anybody.
It was 8.5. All Perfect. Right. Okay, so yeah. Rios got into that impossible box, didn't he?
Oh, we have to stop with this now.
Apologies.
How many more? Let's just count how many jokes he's got in this thing.
Jokes.
All right. This episode was written by Nick Zayas, who needs to write more episodes of this show. Take the note. Shaboom!
Shaboom!
And this was directed by Maha Rilo. Before we dive into episode 6 of Picard, I want to remind everybody to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple.
Do it.
Seriously, we need these subscriptions. We need these 5-star reviews to keep doing this podcast.
It helps. People find the pod.
Yeah.
Also, if you've already subscribed on Apple or wherever you listen, then please share the pod with a friend or family member or a person that you like to dull your emotional pain with.
Somebody you like to find.
Yeah, one of those folks. Most people find out about podcasts from their friends, from their family. So if you can share the show with just one friend, fam, or emotional love person, it helps us out. And then you have something to talk about with your friends and fam. So do it. Expand your horizons. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. You can go to StarTrekPod.co to find out everywhere you can listen to the pod.
And if you guys are watching us right now on YouTube,
then you saw all our great dance moves.
you know. But if you're just listening to this, like a couple days later, please go check us out over on YouTube. We're doing a little YouTube live thing. Yeah. We have a little chat over on the side. Over, let's see, that side.
Maybe
that.
I don't know.
Side.
On one side of us.
Yeah. Anyway, you guys can come join live with us. We try and do this at 9 p.m. Central every single week, and we'd love to have the interaction with you guys. You guys also get to chat with each other, tell each other how
right or wrong your theories are.
Yeah. How handsome Clyde is in his little bear suit here.
Yeah, it's looking good. Good job, Clyde. Way to dress up week two.
And be sure when you're over on YouTube to subscribe. We also have a little extra bonus channel where there's mini Star Trek clips.
Oh, yeah.
From our YouTube episode.
Star Trek Discovery Pod bonus channel.
Bonus Jonas, I think is what it's called.
Do it.
So go clips check
channel.
That out.
That's what it is, a clips channel.
The clips channel. Yeah. So go there as well and subscribe and spread the love, guys. Patreon? Have we mentioned Patreon?
We have not.
You know what? We here at Star Trek Discovery Pod love to have a nice long preamble before we get into discussing the episode. That's what we love.
Grant likes to troll the commenters.
Like to troll the commenters.
If you want no preamble and you just want to hear us straight up discuss extra stuff.
There you go.
You can listen to us on Patreon.
Patreon.com/StarTrekPod. Go there and make a $2 an episode pledge. And you guys can also go ahead and join us over on our private, exclusive, super swanky Slack channel.
Where you get all the best gifts and insider knowledge and everyone correcting all of the mistakes. We'll be like, every podcast.
Someone's going to tell you it's called GIF. Yes. They're wrong. It's GIF.
It's GIF. We want to encourage everyone watching the live stream to leave some comments for sure. We'll get to them later in the show. If you have questions for the podcast that we can get to later on the live stream, just type the word pod, all caps, before your comment.
You can also tag us if that also...
Oh, does that work?
Yeah, if you just tag us at the beginning, like at Star Trek Pod, that's also easy for us to kind of scroll and see. Either way, we're just trying to make it easier for us to scroll through.
Yep. All right. So, episode 6 of Picard. The Impossible Box. I think we're going to hear some hot freaks tonight.
Ooh. Hot freaks!
All right. Who's got to take freak first?
I mean, what else do you need in an opening except for a shirtless, very handsome person to be playing soccer? I was into it.
Is that your super hot take?
It's my super hot
and sexy take.
It's my super hot and sexy take. No, I thought there were really great performances on this whole episode. There are some like difficult emotional acting. So I thought the entire cast did a really great job. And then I also really enjoyed. So I was watching some like fan videos today and someone pointed out the fact that every episode has started with a memory. And I felt like a dum-dum for not noticing that sooner.
A memory or a flashback or something. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, dang.
Yeah. And this episode was all about memories or false or planted memories.
It's not all memories because the one on
or
Mars
flashbacks.
Isn't, right?
Okay. Well, there's somebody's memory.
Flashbacks.
So anyway,
they did.
I was like, dang, how is this taking me so long to figure this out? But yeah, so we obviously open with a little glimpse of Soji's past, air quote past, as she's trying to emotionally figure some things out. But yeah, I thought great performances all the way around from the cast. I thought the writing was really tight. I really appreciate we finally get to see some of the puzzle revealing itself. Some of our theories maybe starting to come together and also some theories maybe getting disproved. I also love seeing more of the Borg cube. If you can't give me an alien planet, at least give me lots of new ship to see. So yeah, I was into it.
Mike, what are you thinking?
I'm with you. This felt like the most sure-footed episode that we've gotten so far. I felt like I was like in really good hands in terms of the showrunners. Like they had a destination and they went right to it. This pace was really swift. There was a lot of exposition, but it was all really intriguing. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't just weighed down by it.
The least amount of incest we've ever seen on the episode.
Yeah,
thus
I mean that's a negative. But it zipped along at a good clip. It had me all the way. Like. I was tense when it wanted me to be tense. I was emotional when it wanted me to be emotional.
Turned on when they wanted you to be turned on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm turned on to the whole thing. but I really love that the reunion between Picard and
Hugh.
Yeah, that was great. And the theme of Picard, Jurati, and Soji, and even Raffi, like facing these painful and difficult pieces of themselves together, like I thought that theme was just played out so wonderfully. Even the dialogue was better in this one. Some of it was actually clever, which is great. So yeah, Chabon needs to hand off more episodes to Christian Beyer, who wrote Stardust City Rag, and Nick Zayas, who wrote this episode. It was good.
It's a good room. It's a good room.
My hot take time?
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm probably a little bit more down on this episode than you two. I think that this is going to be one of the less memorable episodes of the season to me. It felt a little bit mechanical, moving things kind of in place. There was some emotional study, but I didn't feel like it delved as deep as it could have to have some sort of kind of emotional epiphany or something of that matter. So
I think it was an episode that really linked a lot of things and then also set up a lot of things.
Right.
But for a linking episode or for a setup episode, like it did kind of feel like a penultimate episode of a season because things were being put in place for like some kind of showdown. But for it being one of those, I thought it was really fun and it captured my attention the entire time. I do agree that it could have gone deeper, especially with the with the Soji stuff and her and Narek. But well, I'm not really expecting a lot of depth on this show anymore.
Right. I mean, I'm in here for the long haul, so I get that this is part of a serialized storytelling. But at the same time, when I look at this just as an episode on its own, which I feel like the hot take is encompassing just that aspect a little bit, I feel like they're setting in place the emotional journey or the that Raffi's going to go through before she kind of comes out the other end stronger, better, hopefully more self-actualized and having more focus and purpose. But it seemed like there was the beginnings of therapy going on for Picard, which is good, especially in his whole dynamic with Hugh. Jurati is kind of dabbling in what her secret pain is, and Rios is not really revealing, but he sure is a human pillow for everyone else to kind of cry on. But at the same time, it all just felt like it was getting there. It was edging. That's an awful term, but it didn't quite get to the payoff that I wanted. So
I appreciate that it's getting there, and the way it is getting there is if the way it's getting there is going to be giving all our main characters some really at least one really good scene, even if they're in the background and they're adding to the texture of that scene, that's great. That's what this episode did. That Raffi scene where she
Michelle Hurd did an incredible
job. She did an impeccable job. Like you see the entire—
Is that the actress's name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh yeah, she was my favorite part, I think, of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah,
you see the entire like emotional gamut with her and what she's going through. You see she comes out of the room and she's drunk and she's high and she puts herself together and she's extremely charming, but she's also really ashamed of herself. And then and then she has a victory, and while everybody's clapping for her, she just slumps off back to bed. Like you see the entire character in that one scene. It's so good.
Yeah, I think she did a really great job really portraying, I think, a realistic, portrayal. She did a good job showing what an actual addict can be like, in that they are very good at being charming when they need to be charming and getting things that they want when they want them, and using those manipulation tools in a specific way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that particular performance for me was really, really good on this episode.
Right. I think my favorite part of that whole scene, though, she was fantastic through it. Like overall, my favorite part of the episode was her putting on the charm, getting through it, and then shutting it down and just having that kind of breakdown. But right after she leaves, everyone else's face, like looking at it, was like, oh shit, she's going through some stuff. That was
Picard's
heavy.
Like,
and Picard's like, yeah! He's lost all empathy for other people.
Yeah.
And
it's weird. It's just like, yeah, you accomplished the task that I needed accomplished.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
And is that kind of what they've been hinting at in the rest of this episode, too? Like that Like Hugh was also kind of pointing out, like, yeah, you don't fully relate to other people. You don't seem to have that same empathy, and you kind of have to work to get that back. But I think that's what we're seeing. This is why he was so disconnected from Raffi. Like, here he's just once again using her, even though he's like, it's been pointed out to him multiple times. It's not going through. It's not getting through.
Yeah, even
he's just using people.
Even in the previously on, when we see him talking to Elnor, I was reminded that when Elnor says, "Why do you need me?" He's looking to him and, you know, like, "Come on, Dad, tell me you love me."
Yeah.
And he's like, "Oh, I need you because I'm old and you're young.
And I can emotionally manipulate you to come on this journey with me."
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And I was pondering a lot this episode, because now that we've seen like what Seven of Nine is like now in this particular Star Trek universe, and how Hugh has also grown after, you know, they've become, what are they, XBs. They both seem to have more emotional depth than Picard does. And I think there is a, like, this whole thing, they're like, well, he's emotionally stunted because of his time as a Borg. But I was like, these two characters spent way more time in the collective.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And seem to have so much more compassion for other people at this point.
Can I say, I really think it's the writers being really interested in the idea that Picard always did have some emotional distance from everyone in TNG. And while that wasn't played up throughout the entire series, when it was very strong. There's episodes where Picard actually kind of fell in love with one of his crew members. Mm-hmm. And then something tragic happens to that person. And then after that, he really distances himself from the crew, to the point where in the final episode of TNG, it's a huge deal that he comes and he breaks that barrier. But of course, we see him here set back. And I think the Chabon and the writers are really interested in exploring that aspect of this aging former leader who never really developed strong emotional ties to anyone.
He's that older boomer generation. Their kids go off, get married, leave them behind. And blood, their only friend is Fox News
and wine.
and a couple of creepy Romulans.
We talked about Michelle Hurd, how good she was in this episode. I think Allison Pill is doing some amazing work on this show, like with Jurati feeling extremely guilty about murdering Maddox in the last episode. She's doing some great work. And she's the most fascinating character on the show, because she's kind of being broken and rebuilt, but we don't know where she's going. And she doesn't know either. I think
she knows.
I don't think she knows. She seems very guilty. Like that guilt is really weighing her down, but she's
so driven to get to Soji before anyone else, though, at this point.
Is she? She didn't get on the Borg cube. She didn't want to be on the Borg cube.
Did you see her? I think she wanted to get on that cube. Mm-hmm. And she was just playing up like.
And then she's like, I didn't get on it.
But she's all like, why can't we just tell them that, you know, who we are and what we need to do? And like, I'm playing this naive character who just murders people and doesn't say anything.
Right.
But it's more
complex than that. I think she's really dealing with the guilt of what she 100%. Feels that she has to do. And I'm here for it. I'm here to see where she ends up at the end of this. Is she going to turn fully bad? It's going to be like is she going to break bad for real?
Is she the Borg queen?
What? I still don't even know what that means.
It's just a queen who's a Borg.
Okay. Yeah. If Jurati's your most interesting character, I think for me, with this episode in particular, Rios, the way he was presented to us as this tough, surly, distant, like brooding tough guy. Did I say tough enough? Mm-hmm. But he's got a wound in his chest and he's just like pouring alcohol on it, like big whoop. I'm just going to get this pulled out. And how did he get that? Do we even know? Do we know this mystery wound? Like, is he self-harming? I don't know what this is. But how empathetic he is to everyone else's pain in this episode, and how he just kind of goes up to each person, and he's immediately cognizant of it. He recognizes it in Jurati, and he's like, "What do you need? Do you need a booty call from me? I can give you a booty call. And do you need me to hold your hand and make you some coffee, Raffi? I can do that. You know, whatever it takes." And I think that whatever pain he's hiding from himself in his self-imposed exile on his spaceship up in space, he is still very in tune to how to help other people. And it's kind of refreshing, especially when you think back to all of our discussions we would have about Discovery and how, like, everyone needed therapy is what you would always say. Like, man, all these people just need therapy. And he is, in a way, like a therapist. He's there to listen to people to help them kind of talk through their problems.
Yeah, he's almost like he's definitely the foil to Picard, right? So he is the captain that's available for hire, but he's much more emotionally in tune with his crew. He's willing to cross lines with that crew. You know, it's like, instead of it being Federation or cause above all, it's really like self-preservation and human connection above all, it seems, for Rios.
Yeah, that goes back to what I think the writers are obsessed with. I think they want to tell a story where Picard learns the power of that and how important that is.
The power of the booty call.
The power of the booty call, yeah. Do you think he called her Jefe?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Mariah, who would you say is your MVP, your most interesting character right now?
Not Rick.
Not Rick. Hey, you know what? He was kind of good this episode, right?
Everybody was really good. Yeah, I think overall
pathos there.
Oh, man. Are you saying like overall or just this episode?
Based on this episode. Who are you digging right now? Or the culmination up to this episode, I guess. So it is encompassing?
That's a good question. I think it's a very strong ensemble, so it's a little hard to say because I think none of these characters have... I don't think I'd want to watch a show with any of these people singularly by themselves yet. Maybe Rafi, honestly. Like, she's just like getting kind of wasted, checking Reddit conspiracy theories, living in the desert, you know? So I think Rafi, for me, is probably the most interesting character. And I think the character that has been presented as being the most redeemable within this season, as far as like, I think where they're going to have her journey go.
Okay.
Potentially.
Yeah.
She gets them out of all kinds of pickles all the time.
Nobody picked Elnor.
He's had like 10 lines the entire show.
They are shortchanging Elnor. Let's talk about Elnor for just a second.
I mean, his fight sequences are dope. I will say the fight choreography is really great.
I did notice that he's picking up on Jurati's guilt. Mm-hmm. You know, like that conversation where sorry, I'm still inbutting, right? He picks up on that and Picard is just like, oh, I'm sure this is hard for you. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, can I?
Elnor is like, there's something going on with you that you're hiding.
Yeah.
Yeah, he knows something.
Can I point out that was my least favorite scene, I think?
Yeah, that wasn't very good.
Him saying in-butting or out-butt, or whatever he said. I don't understand, first off, how you have a guy who has the confidence to swing a sword and slice a head in half, but doesn't have the confidence to be like, hey, I'm on this ship. I'm a gun for hire. Tell me what's going on. Let me be in the conversation.
I mean, like, he's like any major sports player, right? From my understanding.
You tell me you just saw... Sports.
I have one skill. I can catch that football.
But... You tell me you just saw Birds of Prey, right?
Yeah.
He reminds me of Huntress, who is really socially awkward and doesn't know how to connect to people, but can kill anybody with anything. Yeah.
Because she's just been training to kill people.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing.
Like him.
Yeah. He only knows how to kill people. He doesn't know how to have any emotional connection because that would
provide
guilt.
He's green.
But what are the writers doing with it? Like, you like the writing, but...
I like his, like, kind of comic relief-esque, and then, you know, the fight sequences are really cool. And I think this next episode, we're going to, you know, see some more of that, because they're really setting up that he's about to go into battle to protect Hugh.
Yeah, and we're going to see him away from Picard's side.
Yeah.
And through this whole series, he's just been Picard's puppy dog. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to see him away from that one. We'll see what his personality really is like.
That scene where they're having the conversation about whatever the code of super honesty, and he just like parrots Picard. But then he notices the tension between Rios and Jurati. That bugged me so much. That was the one I was talking about. That's my least favorite scene because all of the interaction comes to a screeching halt for a joke to be made.
For like a scene from Friends.
Yeah, yes. Like, where's the laugh track of the, ooh. or whatever. Suddenly he has to go, what's going on here? While Picard just is like, all right, let's wait for you to kind of notice this so I can get back to my point. Ah, the whole thing. Sometimes that's my Clyde nitpick or whatever.
Well, with Rios, you know, we see that he's down for whatever. You said he's like a human pillow for everybody. He's even DTF with Girardi. Do y'all think his soft spot for Girardi, which we've kind of seen play out in previous episodes, kind of bite him in the ass, or maybe
I don't know what their kink is.
Well, he had. I hope it. Yeah, let's not go there. That's for the Patreon. Well, he has a soft spot for her, so I think,
and a hard spot.
I think she can maybe manipulate. I think she is getting to a point where maybe she can really manipulate him and put people in danger.
Well, I wonder.
Like she has the ear of the captain and the dick of the captain.
Yeah, but what if she's getting dickmatized? You know, what if he's really the one? What if he's the one looking to manipulate her?
I mean,
hello.
Hello. He's a very handsome son of a bitch. Yeah.
But yeah, I think it could go. Yeah. I think it could go either way, as I hope Rios does. But I got to stop with these.
Sorry.
I started it. Sorry, guys. But yeah, I think it could go either way. Like maybe he thinks something's up with her and is trying to get close with her and like also just has this emotional soft spot. But yeah, I think it can go either way.
Is there some more like dramatic endgame for him? He seems just kind of he's wash. He's floating in the wind like a leaf. He's there going with the flow.
But what if his like holograms are talking and are like, dude, she's like freaking out all the time and like something went down in that medical bay. And so
she murdered him. Yeah. I've seen it.
So maybe he's like, oh, well, if I get close enough to her, maybe she'll reveal something.
I find him so intriguing because there's got to be more to his story. We know that he's experienced very deep trauma, saw his captain die in a really bloody way. Mm-hmm. So we're going to maybe have an episode or at least a mini arc with him where
maybe
it gets
the next memory
a little deeper.
Is his.
Maybe.
Mm-hmm. Who's experienced the most trauma? I mean, Girardi had
trauma off.
Yeah, she had to murder her lover boss
after he disappeared for a year.
Soji is a three-year-old who's discovering she's a robot assassin. Narek is forced to hook up with that three-year-old.
And kill the woman he loves.
Yeah.
And he can't take off his Bluetooth headset.
And he used his real Romulan name. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a master pickup artist. That was a
move.
That was a fucking dirty move.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Who has the most trauma? That's a good question. I think
Picard was actually like really kind of facing his trauma a bit with Hugh being this kind of guiding hand, Virgil taking him through his pain and kind of walking through it.
Picard's return to the Borg cube was very affecting. Even with those like overdone Dutch angles and everything at the beginning, it was still really good. Like Patrick Stewart really sold me on the fear Picard has when he steps on that ship. Like the fear of being assimilated again and turning into everything that he's not, that is just so cold and that killed so many people. Mm-hmm. And the way he walks through that trauma with Hugh, like you were saying, Hugh is there for him. I loved his meeting with Hugh, finally.
We got someone who's excited to see
finally,
Picard.
I mean, not that those previous, you know, reunions I didn't go to were not, you know, earned, but this one was great because Jonathan Del Arco, who plays Hugh, always like emoted this great sense of empathy on the original show, and he still has that. Mm-hmm. And so when Picard showed up and he greeted him with open arms and was like, I will do anything for you. It just felt right. It was so good. And then he knew
like
that
this.
Picard had to like walk through the Borg reclamation project because it would mean so much to Picard.
It was like his firewalk.
To see that. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. I think that it was such a necessary contrast to the perhaps self-centered kind of tone of every other character in this show. Like people are really operating out of self-interest. And even with Rios, we're not really sure what his motivation is there. And there's a deep melancholy to all of those scenes. But when we saw Hugh, it was love. Mm-hmm. It was love and friendship, and just seeing that is almost this like this wellspring of just like, relief. Like this is a scene that I can breathe in, and I feel the joy of their kind of connection.
As a TNG fan, that almost brought me to tears because I love those episodes with Hugh. And the whole arc of Hugh was that he was a Borg, but Picard and Geordi and the people on the Enterprise taught him empathy, taught him humanity. And those are the traits that he held on to when, you know, every time the Borg tried to come back for him or he felt any kind of opposition, he held on to those things as the core of humanity.
Was he like this in TNG?
They had started to de-Borg him, but not to this extent.
Yeah, he still had some of the Borg stuff on him, but he was not connected to the collective.
His acting was great here.
He's really good.
I loved it. Like I immediately...
He was so good back then, too.
He just felt so genuine.
Yeah.
And sometimes the material doesn't lend itself to some of these characters easily feeling genuine so much as mustache twirly.
Mm-hmm.
I dug it. I bought into it.
And I think the makeup department did a really great job of applying enough for you to recognize Hugh as someone who used to be Borg if you're new to the series, but also giving him enough room to act through all of that makeup, which can be very difficult, especially for emotional scenes.
Because the other ones are all melty face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was watching some behind the scenes stuff and like the rows and rows of extras that they had set up to become the ex-Borgs was kooky, and those makeup departments just did an excellent job, I think, of all of that. The only question I did have that I was thinking about, though, is like, I feel like both Hugh and Seven of Nine don't look so scarred. And so I'm like, what's going on with this like medical technology that we're not able to like heal this up a little bit better? I know they've both obviously been
not like better grafting kind of technology.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I think even today we have some better tech for scar tissue, but, you know, I know both Seven of Nine and Hugh's characters have been disconnected from the collective for much longer than these folks have. So I understand they're trying to show progression.
Right. There are pitfalls to Medicare for All.
Oh, no. That's Borg for All.
Borg for
totally
All.
Totally different. But yeah, I thought the makeup department did a really good job with Hugh and then with all of the, you know, the sort of bots, if you will, that Picard at first was really afraid of because they came and grabbed him.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, they're here to help you. Mm-hmm. And so I think him trying to grapple with the idea that the Borg were helpful was very interesting.
That was so powerful with him and the Borg.
Like,
I loved him saying, after all these years, you're showing what the Borg are underneath. They're victims, not monsters. That was such a powerful idea. Mm-hmm. And it's so true. I love that.
Yeah. I went back because that statement made me really try to think about the origin story of the Borg because we've never really like the full, like, how did they even start? But they did just like they were the ultimate colonizers of the galaxy, right? Mm-hmm. And just like taking over all of these people and their cultures and their technology.
They don't change. They must metastasize.
Yeah. And so it's just like very interesting. I hope we get some more history of Borg maybe next season. I think would be really cool.
That particular scene where Geordi does the kind of the info dump of like, oh, you were Locutus. Fans, Locutus was Wikipedia article.
Yeah.
Do you notice that one ex-Borg who's like, Locutus.
I know.
Long time no see.
Like, hey, bitch, man. Not right now.
Don't drop my dead name. Like, what are you doing?
But that, like, when he was explaining like what he went through to Geordi, as a person who isn't familiar with what all went down with Locutus, that music was a bit too intense.
I don't remember the music.
Oh, it was like dun 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 dun. Oh, he's like, it was terrible when I was Locutus. I did not like it.
It was just trying to set up the idea that he sees
who chose his music.
It was just trying to set up the idea that he hates them so much, but then now he can kind of have empathy for them later.
Yeah. Right.
It was pretty powerful.
It's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm.
So can we talk about the dream sequence?
Oh, the orchid. Pinocchio?
No, that was weird.
It's super deep, and we have to unpack all those metaphors.
It's pretty on the surface.
So daddy issues.
Again. Always.
Then that was it. Daddy issues, and she gave up the location, because why wouldn't they program into her dream memory the exact location of their hideout as well?
Well, it could be, like they were saying, a bit of a malfunction. Like, she is having some sort of a memory of when she was created 37 months ago and probably did see a lot of electricity and the moons and all this stuff. And because she's been programmed to think she has a childhood, she's now processing it as if she was a child.
Yeah. Her unconscious is seeing it through, like, a third-person lens.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. The idea of the of an android having a subconscious was really interesting here. And even though it was obviously a story point to get us from A to B, I think mm-hmm. it played out pretty artfully.
Yeah, and I really liked the moment that Narek had to watch her with that poisonous gas, and then he obviously didn't, you know, the guy tried to open the door, and I think he was like, no, the gas, but I think at the same time, he's like, I'm just going to let her get out.
He was like, don't shoot her.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to do. Yeah. Like, she's going to T2 her way through the floor. Mm-hmm.
But
it'll be fine.
Also, his emotional, like, very honest emotional kind of moment where he was hurting in the fact that he did have a love connection
shed
with
a
her.
Tear.
Yeah.
It, baby tear.
He's like, I get that I'm part of this game, but at the same time,
I could
break good. I could be part of the good guys.
Yeah, I think he's definitely having a lot of internal struggles, but knew he had to deliver something to incestuous sister or else she was going to come find him in his sleep.
I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, so Hugh taking Picard and Soji to the former Borg Queen's secret hideout.
Yeah, with this, like, crazy portal jump.
Yeah.
And is that something you guys were at all familiar with?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the Queen's quarters, right. Yes, but that particular
tech. She has, like, a Stargate in there?
Well, no, because
I love Stargate. Yeah, can we do that show next?
This is Stargate, yeah. Well, it was evocative of a couple things, because in Voyager, we do learn that the Borg have, like, these huge, they don't call them Stargates, but they're portals where they can jump to different parts of the galaxy. You know, they have, like, freeways. And also in TOS, in City on the Edge of Forever, mm-hmm. the Guardian has a similar gate where Kirk and Spock pass through to get to any place in time and space. And in this episode, I had to look it up because it sounded familiar. There's a Voyager episode where they meet the Sicarians.
Yeah, that's the Sicarians are first introduced in Voyager.
Yeah.
And they try to use the same tech to get home, but they fail.
So the Borg assimilated the Sicarians, but they created this spatial projector is what they call mm-hmm. it. So yeah, this is a total reference, like really
multiple
deep,
layers, yeah.
Multiple layered portal jumping reference.
That was also the impossible box that Borg, the cube within the cube, the Queen's layer thing.
It almost felt like the Harry Potter, the Room of Requirement. It was like it appeared when it needed to be there.
Yeah.
very obviously a deus ex machina.
Mm. And the Rubik's Cube was also the impossible box.
Yeah, there's lots of good layers to that.
Yeah, and then Girardi's impossible box.
Well, his actual Rubik's Cube impossible box mm-hmm. that he loves.
Fingering?
Yeah, playing around with.
Just let them die, Grant. Just let them die. Don't react.
Makes me so uncomfortable. The whole discussion, though, with the box being the metaphor for Soji, that was not delicately or cleverly handled.
Listen,
I would say
the Soji Narek stuff is always, my expectations get really low when we're on that Borg cube. Okay, and what they did here actually exceeded my expectations. It
I just
been a
thought
lot
they
worse.
Had like one of those drawing boards. They're like, look, audience, Soji. Impossible cube, but here I'm really good at manipulating it. Oh, Jesus, I get it.
Yeah, I did think the production design both on that toy and in the room that they went into were really cool.
Oh, super cool.
And and I like the reference. I know not everyone likes Chakotay. I'm like the only freaking Chakotay fan in the universe, I think. But there's a lot of talk about how his, you know, culture has like meditative rooms and things that they use to kind of help them process.
I pray
things.
To the bones of my grandfathers.
Yes,
is what he says.
But this room felt very much like those like meditative walking gardens because it has this path, right? And he's trying to get her to walk along this path to go deeper into her mind. And so I appreciated the multi-layered reference there as well.
Wonder if Shebone has one of those in his backyard.
I mean, maybe fancy people seem to.
Yeah,
I don't know how fancy he is.
It's pretty fancy.
His name is Shebone.
Shebone!
It's very fancy.
If Mike finds reason to say Shebone.
He's going to say it. But yeah, I also think the production design on the Borg cube, because we got to see a little bit more of it, because they're running through all these hallways and things are shifting and there's like computer things happening and all the graphics. I thought the production team did a really great job on this episode.
I definitely understand why someone would feel very uncomfortable going back to that place.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The way they filmed that, the space that they constructed feels very claustrophobic, mm-hmm. very constricting, very cold and sterile. And
well, what's funny is that
it's almost
hot.
As bad as eating out of Luby's or something. Just the worst.
It's like a steam room tech place because the Borg
keep it
really hot and like humid.
I really appreciate it, and I thought it worked really well. All the scenes we got from First Contact, the mm-hmm. movie, like with the Borg Queen sidling up right to his face, and oh, that was so good.
Yeah, I did think the like picture-in-picture of his face as a Borg.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was
a little much. Yeah.
I was like, I'd rather have seen his actual reaction instead of having to try to
when
see
he's
it through that.
Looking on the computer screen. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I love that Hugh says our Borg Queen is now a Romulan. Just kind of the idea that we're just working for the Romulans now.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny.
Like, they're still drones at the mercy of someone else.
Exactly, yeah. And
like
even
any
though,
good academic, they are they have to work for whoever has the money, right?
Yes.
But the purity of the reason that he goes there, he has the option not to, but
right.
He's like,
mm-hmm. he's a Federation citizen.
Yeah, but he's like, I recognize that I could help my fellow people by being here and kind of being a buffer.
Yeah.
And very noble. What a good, pure, noble character Hugh is.
His character was so great in TNG, and that is carried on through this series. I like how he was kind of not so subtly trying to get Picard on board to his cause.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, may you can be an advocate for Borg, so people will stop killing us and taking our cortical nodes.
People love when you advocate for stuff.
Everybody
advocate.
Likes you, right?
Yeah.
How's that going?
But I do think I feel like Picard is probably going to come around to it eventually because
he's already starting to.
Yeah, because he's already seen what happened to Hugh and to Seven of Nine, who mm-hmm. at this point have more humanity than he does. Mm-hmm. And so I think he's like, oh, well, if they can do it, I guess we should try.
So they beam Picard onto this Borg cube. Mm-hmm. And then they just kind of leave this dude wallowing in pain for probably like 5-10 minutes as he's going through some PTSD trauma. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, all right, he's about to fall over the ledge. Go help him out there. And now we'll go say hi. Like, don't they always beam? Like, they say, beam here.
No,
then we come greet you immediately.
No, the idea was, I think the Romulans didn't want to alert anybody to Picard's presence. So they kind of beamed him in a hallway back where no one would find them.
Oh.
They sent Hugh, like, he wants to talk to you. Go deal
go
with
find
him.
Yeah.
That's my headcanon.
Felt a bit low.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to beam him to the bridge, and mm-hmm. he's not there to see the Romulans anyway.
Yeah.
So Hugh asks the question, which, or was it Hugh or Picard? Someone asked this question, which seems important. And it was, what does the Tal Shiar need from synthetics? What do they need from Soji in particular? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what is it? What is the location was obviously it. They want to destroy it. But did you guys get a sense that they want something more than just simply destroy them? Do you think this kind of goes back to that theory we were talking about, that Reddit theory about that they are also synthetics and they want to
maybe
destroy any trace of
but also is
a new uprising?
But then I feel like if they were synthetics, they would recognize that planet right away, right?
Yeah.
Because they still have to figure out
what. We still don't know
what
Soji is. Like, is she a Borg? Is that the Borg homeworld that they want to destroy? Because
ooh, that would be cool.
Yeah, in the first, in the opening act of this series, we're told over and over again, Soji and, what's her name? Dharma and Greg? What's her name? Dodge.
Dharma and Greg.
That's how I remember her name.
That's your mnemonic device.
That's my mnemonic device. That does not work.
Yeah.
That Soji and Dharma were the only two passable, like, sentient mm-hmm. Synthetic life forms out there. But now we've seen multiple references with the Romulans saying there's a whole a bunch of them. We got to find them all and kill them. So that makes me think, are they talking about the Borg? And have the Borg evolved so much that they look human?
Ooh, that would be cool. And maybe that's the actual reason why they have this cube and they're willing to do this project, is because they think if they can bring these people back, they can get some memory from the collective.
Why would they do that? Because the Borg have been all over the galaxy. They traveled further than anyone has, collecting not only people, but the information those people have in their head.
Yeah.
So if the Romulans can get that information, then they can fucking rule.
And then they could be the Borg Queen.
Right.
And the Romulan is the Borg Queen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be, I would be so down to get more Borg like origin story and figure out where they're from.
Especially with the way especially with how the Borg, like being confronted with the Borg again, is making Picard react.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah. What if Data was combined? Again, we come back to when on First Contact, Data is combined with the Borg flesh to look more realistic. So.
Yeah.
I think that might.
A big theme here that we're getting is the melding of the synthetic and the organic.
Yeah.
You know, like we saw in that movie.
Yes, indeed, like in the movie. The other thing, too, I was looking back because I was trying to figure out if there was anything that I just couldn't remember about the Borg history. And Seven of Nine on Voyager mentions that there is a big swath of the timeline for the collective that is very hazy. And I think it is wherever their home planet actually is, because no one actually knows where their home planet is.
Right.
Very interesting.
We got to go there, guys.
Let's do it. I love alien planets. Take me to the Borg.
Yeah, you got to be a little disappointed. We're not seeing many in this series.
What was the name of the planet that Picard pieces off to?
That's wherever Riker lives.
Nazarek. Oh, that's what it was?
I think so.
Well, it's called Nepenthe. And
Farm World. Because he looks like a farmer with like crazy.
Yeah, it's like retirement.
I read some theories online that Nepenthe is maybe Klingon space. Because in Star Trek VI, I believe, Kirk and Bones are sent to like a Klingon prison world called Rurapenthe.
I don't.
Could be stretching it. But I would love to see some Klingon show up in this series.
So maybe that's. I would assume that's where we're going to be next. Is
yeah, we're definitely going to a planet next, based
planet
on
Canada.
The preview, yeah, it definitely looks like they're shooting in Toronto.
we got a Gold Press Latinum reference with Rios and Girardi, which we keep wondering, like, what is the monetary system now in this world? Since we were post money in TNG, but of course, Gold Press Latinum was the currency that people living outside of the Federation use. So. Are they using it just because they're outside of the Federation, or, you know, and do Federation citizens use Gold Press Latinum?
I mean, it could be like, you know, how like hardly anyone actually uses Bitcoin, but there are people who use Bitcoin because it can't be traced.
There you go. You know,
it could just be like more black market currency that people use.
We discussed a bunch about Elsnor and...
Did you just call him El Snore.
and Deadbeat Dad Picard. But I think that we see here, like, that relationship continues, of course. He still is like, El Snore, you stay here. Don't do anything. Just, I don't even know why I recruited you, why we wasted an entire episode bringing you along. It seemed like a dick move now that I think about it, because I really don't want you doing
then
anything.
He's like, I'm releasing you of this duty.
Right. And then, like, it's like, dude, you didn't let me do anything.
Let me cut off one head.
Guys, it was just all about him, Han Solo, Millennium Falconing in at the end.
Yeah. He totally needed to come in and rescue and earn his keep. But also, what about this mission? This might be a little nitpick as well. What about this mission from that episode was such a lost cause that he wanted to join it? Like, why did this come across to Elsnor as a lost cause? Do you feel like they sold that?
Yeah, I mean, because Picard didn't even know where he was going.
I mean, that's a fair point.
He's literally lost.
Yeah. He had no map.
But they knew they were going to Free Cloud.
Chabon didn't give him a map.
They're going to be little detectives, and they're going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think he probably felt like he needed the protection more at Free Cloud than anywhere else, based on all
that was before they went to Free Cloud, or that they knew they were going to pre-cloud, wasn't it? No. Could be wrong.
I totally thought Hugh was going to die, and now I'm not sure if Hugh and Elsnor might die.
Choose to live.
Yeah, that was a pretty dope line, though.
That was a good, like, cutaway, fade to black. I was like,
that was really good.
Yeah, I don't know. You did mention a little bit about the idea of life and synthetics fusing together the organic material. And I wanted, if you guys have watched it, to discuss that intro sequence again. It's been 6 episodes since we probably have all hit skip since we get to it.
I watch it every time.
Do you watch it every time?
Yeah.
Okay.
I leave it on because my CBS All Access app will just freeze up if I try to do anything to it.
Yeah, you can't go backwards and forwards.
No, you cannot.
Not very friendly. Not without a commercial playing 10 times.
Well, what do you guys think of it now? Now that we've seen it for 6 episodes, has it grown on you? Do you like the music?
I was trying to pull something from it, and I did pull the theme of something organic, because we see that piece of sky fall down, and it mirrors everything around it, including like a tree and the grassland. Then it mirrors everything that is synthetic in the Borg cube until it finally lands on Picard's cheek. And before all that, it grows off into two different pieces and comes back together. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like this, it's definitely the theme of like mending the organic and the synthetic.
I also think it's like Picard putting himself back together and having to go on this like journey to finally find all of the pieces of himself.
What do you guys think that, because we talked about Picard potentially rejoining the Borg Collective last week. Do you think we're going to see him actually do that as a sacrifice to where he has to like inject his humanity into the Borg? I think that'd be an interesting ending.
I think
ending.
Only if Data shows up.
Okay, and he wants to save Data?
Yeah.
Does he show that he still has enough humanity to be the savior of humanity? Is he a good template? Because right now, looking at this picture behind you, I'd put Hugh in there instead of Picard.
Yeah.
Picard doesn't give a fuck about poor Raffi every time she's hurting. Is he the best?
Good job, Raffi. Go have another drink.
Yeah.
I think he's going to learn that he has to rely on other people.
Okay.
And, like, I think he has to learn he cannot be the savior. I hope that's the biggest lesson he takes away. And I think they're really painting that picture.
They are.
In that Hugh is the one who's stepped up to kind of reclaim all of these Borg lives. You know, his crew is stepping up to do all of these things for him. You know, obviously Data was that ultimate sacrifice. And so I think he just has to learn that other people can be depended upon and that you have to also provide something to them. And I don't think it has to be the ultimate sacrifice. It has to just be like, oh, I've learned how to be there for you in all of this.
Yeah, this can't be a one-sided relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do we want to jump into some audience questions?
Let's do it.
Before we do that, maybe some listener reviews.
Yeah. But real quick, if you guys are watching right now over on YouTube, go ahead and start tagging us on a bunch of stuff. We'll go ahead and read that after we read some.
I'll read some reviews while you pull up questions.
Before we get to the questions from the live stream, I want to mention that if you leave us a 5-star review on Apple or wherever, we will read it on the pod like we are going to do now.
Right now. Caffeine Slayer says, great crew reviewing the new wave of Trek. They're entertaining and informative fans who review the episodes with great production quality. Oh, thanks. I'm still catching up through their Discovery Season 2, but have yet to find a disappointing episode. By far the best Trek podcast out there. 5 stars.
Yeah, thank you, Caffeine Slayer. From Jackie Fitzpatrick. I love this podcast. I was a little late finding it, but I rewatch the seasons to follow along. I really enjoyed knowing what was going to happen and getting to hear you all hit some nails on the head and then doubt yourself. Looking forward to discovering season 3 together. 5 stars.
Thanks for those reviews, y'all.
Thanks. Yeah. Hit us up on Apple. 5-star reviews.
Do it. Oh, no.
Assimilate.
Resistance is futile.
And we are podcasting live on YouTube where we have questions and comments coming in at warp speed from the live chat. Please go to StarTrekPod.co, click on a YouTube link, subscribe to our YouTube channel. YouTube.
All right. First question comes to us, or first observation comes to us from Chris Rogers, who says, what if the Romulans are tripping out over making sure the Borg don't assimilate passable synths so they don't have the tech?
Interesting.
Huh.
That's a good one.
But can the Borg assimilate a synth?
I mean, they were trying to with Data on First Contact.
Are the Romulans the good guys?
They were trying to seduce Data because they couldn't really assimilate him in the way they assimilate humans.
Well, I think they thought they could because remember he was all like pretending to be assimilated.
No, that was more manipulation. Oh. They never really put the tendrils in him and assimilated him. It was more just sexual and verbal manipulation from the Borg Queen.
Sticking with the theme of the show today.
Chris also says that Nepenthe was the drug from the Odyssey to forget bad things.
That's right. Ooh. Yes. Yes. It's a right? Solve. Yeah.
So if that is where Riker is, mm-hmm. he's trying to forget bad things.
Wow. Apparently like that time. Everyone's got a little bit of a substance problem on this show.
Everyone's
Riker just, is a sex addict.
Everyone's just, oh, is he?
Oh, yeah.
Like, is that actually addressed in the show kind of canon thing? Or
I mean, have you seen those V-necks?
The deep Vs.
The deep Vs. Not just a little.
Wait, is he wearing them, though?
Yes.
Chippy says, remember, Picard told Hugh he was a leader when Hugh didn't think he could be. Picard's always believed in Hugh, guys.
That's true, because Hugh found a bunch of other Borg that he helped escape from the collective, mm-hmm. and he was their leader, which is kind of what he's doing now.
Indeed.
And Wasoha says, you think time travel will end up having anything to do with this?
Maybe.
Oh, I don't know.
Go on to say, during this episode, there was an alert in the background of the cube announcing detection of chronometric activity.
Time travel.
Time particles.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think that was just a throwaway fun nerd reference, I hope.
Or it could be maybe it's activated as some part of the gate, because I would assume there has to be some sort of time travel to be able to go that far that quickly.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, yeah, without the whole...
But Star Trek loves time travel, so who knows?
I also noticed in the background when we were looking in Soji's room, she had that artwork. And it totally looked like she was drawing the mind flare, like in Stranger Things. Did you see that thing in the background?
Mm-mm. No.
I was like, what kind of artwork are you making there? What are you working out in your head?
She is a destroyer.
She is the destroyer.
It's just Godzilla taking out a city.
Christopher Curry says, I hope they don't kill Hugh next episode. Mm. Will the synth world be a callback to something? Can't think of anything more than what I asked above.
Yeah, I don't want to see Hugh die.
Shouldn't have read that part.
I don't think Hugh is going to... No, I don't think they're going to kill Hugh.
I don't think so. I mean, they'll probably torture him to find out where Picard went.
Guys, don't worry. They're probably just going to torture a guy.
A little the light poor guy, torture.
He's been through shit.
The
it's
poor
fine.
Guy who's been through a bunch of torture. Yeah. How about he doesn't have to get tortured anymore?
Well, the other thing
I'm
is
I'm not saying
he
I
could,
want him to get tortured.
The other thing, though, is he could tell them where they've gone, and it's going to take so long for them to get there.
Maybe.
Sardonyx J. Spinell says, the Doctor needs companions. Doctor Who. A little Doctor Who reference there for you.
I got it.
You get it?
I got it. Which Doctor are they talking about, though, on this show?
I mean, if they can get Karen Gillan on this show, that'd be great. She was a companion to Doctor Who.
If Picard dies at the end of this season... What do they do with the second season? Do you think they anticipate this is just going to be a miniseries? Are they pulling a Lindelof on us?
They already renewed it for two.
Right. Yeah. So, but that could
but then
be
you
one.
You can't really call it Star Trek Picard without Picard unless they reveal a Picard offspring.
Or they change the name of the ship to Picard.
What if they do travel back in time and they get James McAvoy to be baby Picard?
No, they need to get Tom Hardy.
Oh, is he?
Oh, I'm in for Tom Hardy.
Yeah, because he was the clone in one of the movies. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm good with
that. I want to be all big and bulky, like, hello, I'm Picard.
Chris Rogers says, although Narek having some name for each juncture of the Romulan Christian labyrinth was kind of like the writers need to come up with something as many Romulan proper nouns as possible. When he's like, oh, this is the...
Someone's got like a book they've just been writing all these things in, and they're like, finally, I can use them all.
copy, paste.
We've all been that nerd, I feel it.
Oh, wait. I just passed another one. Star Trek Discovery Pod from Christopher Curry. Hugh and Picard went through so much together, from the de-assimilation to the time when Lore was trying to control him.
Mm-hmm. That's Data's brother.
Lore?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Kara Lynn says, Grant, you are just killing this assessment of that moment. I'm not sure which moment you're referring
Probably the moment between Girardi and Rios and the awkward joke that you don't like.
I don't know if killing it was in a good way or I ruined it for people.
It's probably that.
I do have a tendency to do that.
I like how someone in our Slack was just like, Mariah did not like that Doctor Who reference. I don't mind Doctor Who. Yeah, I did see that. It's just not my fandom. It's just not my fandom.
Chris Rogers says, oh, wait, sorry. Wrong.
I was like, Chris Rogers, Captain America?
Steve.
That's Steve.
Oh, again.
Chris Evans plays whatever. Steve. Ouch.
It got combined in my brain. It's a little late.
Easter egg, Soji had a lunchbox featuring the adventures of Flotter from Voyager.
Flotter?
Do you guys know what that is?
I don't remember that.
I think it's the, do you remember the kid that Neelix used to read to that was like his god kid? I think that might have been like one of the storybooks.
Oh, maybe it was one of the cartoons Tom Paris used to watch because he's a big baby.
Do you, that. Chris Rogers went on to also postulate, what if they clone / synth Picard? Then they could have a younger version of him and they could just cast another actor if they want to kind of pass the keys over to someone else. And
or they could
maybe he doesn't
want
to do another season.
That technology they used on The Irishman or whatever.
Oh, to like
make them younger.
De-oldify him.
Yeah.
But they still walk around like 70-year-old men, even though they have the 30-year-old face.
How would you guys feel about that, though?
That's fine.
De-aging?
Passing, passing off
we've
the
seen
idea
that so many times
of who Picard, but isn't Picard in a way a little bit more of a sacred character?
No.
He's not a sacred cow of the show where
nothing's
you're like,
sacred.
Don't.
Nothing is sacred.
I mean, if they're
days,
as long, I think as long as they're going back farther than when we've seen him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it like pre-Enterprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know those ideas about how you can now digitally recreate actors, and even after they die, you
I don't
just can't
like
put
all
them
the
in a
Paul
movie.
Walker stuff. Yeah.
In a way, isn't it kind of like it almost feels unfair to their memory? Like they put so much into crafting this character. I don't know.
True. I mean, that's a thing that's happening is a lot of actors and singers and stuff are having to write in what their holograms can and cannot be used for later in life, because now we've seen it, like music festivals will be like hologram Tupac.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to see a digital rendering of Patrick Stewart playing Picard. I'd rather see another actor.
Yeah. Okay.
This comment is awesome. EAE says, so I'm here to support the channel, but I haven't actually watched the episode yet.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So I have you guys on mute.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That is amazing.
Thank you. Take off your shirt for him.
Whoa.
Them. We don't know.
We don't know.
Them.
My spouse likes to watch this before he watches the episode because he's like, it helps me understand stuff.
That is bonkers.
Good. Yeah.
There's no way I could ever say anything that helps people understand something. I reject that. Chippy says, the gate they went through was from a Voyager episode, the Sicarians.
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you already say that?
Yeah.
We did. Okay.
Thank you, Chippy. Yeah. I mean, it's always good to get confirmation from her because she knows her shit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks for all the feedback.
There's probably some more, and I apologize if I missed. But
usually Clyde's looking too, but Clyde is a bear today.
I know.
So he can't.
What do you see here? What's happening?
It's just mute all the way. Well, I'm sorry you didn't love this episode as much as we did. I thought it just moved at such a fast clip and gave us so much, and almost every character had something really cool to do.
This was, I think, one of the longest episodes.
Really?
I thought it was one of the shortest.
It felt so quick.
I thought it was
because I was so engaged.
It was 54 minutes. I've seen some that were like kind of like 40 or so. I just figured this one was a longer one.
Hmm.
But I do agree it went faster than a lot of the other episodes have gone for me.
Yeah.
So in that regard, I do feel like I was engaged the whole time.
We're using the CBS All Access app, at least I am, with the commercials.
Yeah.
And right after the Raffi scene where she grabs her bottle and walks off, there was like a beer commercial.
Oh, no.
But that was funny.
It's better than I get like the weird stool sample commercials. I don't know why.
Whoa.
Yep.
All right. Okay. I think we pretty much covered it.
Smart ad placement.
It's time.
At the end.
Yeah. Again, you can visit us at StarTrekPod.co to check out our entire back catalog. We've covered both seasons of Star Trek Discovery, And if you are watching us on YouTube, make sure to tell your friends or anybody you think might enjoy the show on YouTube, whether it's live or the replay. We'd really love live. But yeah, invite your friends to watch. Watch with them. Invite them to comment. If we get enough engagement on YouTube, we're going to keep doing these shows for Discovery Season 3. And we really want to do them, but we need to get to a certain threshold, and we need everybody to watch. So
if everyone watches, I will come in full Tilly cosplay.
Fucking A.
You know what we did last week?
Oh, yeah. We shaved your head.
Yeah. If you're watching right now, here, let me show you.
There's there's a triangle. Right
poorly
there.
Shaved Star Trek Delta on the back of Grant's head. Better than I could do.
I keep forgetting it's there, and all this week, no one has said anything about it to me.
No,
because I bet you see someone in the back of their head, and they have like a whatever chunk out of there, and they're like, I'm not gonna say anything. I don't know what's going on with that.
People
dude.
Just think you're in a gang.
Well, I think
people look at me and always think, oh, that guy's in a gang.
You also have children, and I always just assume if something's gone wrong, it's from children.
That guy lets his kid play with razors.
Accurate. Hey. Also, we want to encourage you guys, if you're checking us out for the first time, or maybe you've been a listener for a while, you like what we're doing, if you want to help us out, please go to patreon.com/StarTrekPod and make a per episode donation. We don't generally ask for too much. A buck an episode would be awesome. But if you give us $2 an episode, $8 a month, you guys can join us over on the Slack channel, and we promise you, we try to make it worth it. We do a lot of fun things. We talk with you guys. We engage. We do ask for your kind of feedback into what we're doing. And I think we've cultivated a really cool community. Shout out to Karen, who is
probably the most active member.
Oh, she's the leader.
Yeah, she's like
she's
the mom.
Our Borg queen.
Our Borg queen.
It's great stuff going on the Slack channel. Just a few days ago, we started a new channel on there that people wanted about Star Trek books. Mm. So everybody's talking about the Star Trek books. And guess who was the first Star Trek pod crew member to talk about books on the channel?
Clyde?
Was it Clyde?
No, it was me.
Oh, wow. Ah,
motherfucker.
Wow. Sorry.
That was safe assumption.
I'm never going to guess one of your questions again if it gets a motherfucker.
Motherfucker. All right. It's time for us to beam on out of here. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Grant, where can we find you online?
Baron Von Grant, at Baron Von Grant on Instagram, on Twitter. I think there's like the Grant Davis page over on Facebook. You can check that out. I don't care. I have a LinkedIn page if you want to, make some business contacts with me. You can see all the other stuff I do. I do a beer podcast. I do a Create Pod podcast with this guy. Occasionally, I pop onto a TV podcast. On rare occasion, I'll do a video game thing. I was talking about Watchmen, but that show looks like it's no more.
I'm so sad it's not coming back.
I will definitely try to find about 4 or 5 other podcasts to just insert myself in as well. At Baron Von Grant.
Do
Mariah.
It. I'm at Mariah Gossett on all platforms. Don't bother going to Facebook. I'm never on it. Twitter and Instagram. And it's Mariah with a Y, Gossett with 2 S's and 2 T's.
You can find me at Mike Moody on Twitter and at Mike Moody ATX on Instagram, because some other son of a bitch stole at Mike Moody on Instagram.
So salty today.
I did it.
Thanks for watching. Live long and prosper.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Sometimes you just have to bow to the absurd.